Now then, let's have a think about what Marcus has just read for us this morning. The dramatic story of the healing of what's often called the Gerasene demoniac. It's perhaps the most colourful, if not bizarre, of all of the miraculous healings that are recorded for us by Jesus in the Gospels. This story is included in Matthew, Mark and Luke, with various differences. This year, in the church's three-year cycle of working through the scriptures, we hear the story according to Luke. Well, where shall we start? Well, let me start here. I think these days, demon possession is not our first diagnosis for people who have tormented, chaotic, and harmful behavior. I hope you will agree with that. Modern psychiatric medicine recognizes there are many mental illnesses that can overwhelm our capacity for reason, our ability to think straight, and to maintain stable relationships, and generally what we might call have peace of mind. Now, it's often said, and perhaps you've heard this statistic as well, that one quarter of us will suffer some form of mental illness during our lifetimes, which I suppose means most of us, if not all of us, will either experience mental health issues directly ourselves or in someone close to us, let alone the impressions we may get from strangers. Now, 2,000 years ago in Galilee, people had a different worldview than we do. Things which we think are obvious were not understood in the same way in the past. For example, I don't know if you've been watching it, but while Professor Brian Cox, astrophysicist, is able to stalk various desolate landscapes on Earth to film his series explaining the planets in our solar system, there was no similar insight for the people of Israel or for the regions around the Lake of Galilee. For them, the universe was commonly understood simply as having three layers or three decks, with the earth in the middle, the heavens above, and the underworld below. That was their cosmic picture. And in some ways, this idea persists. But we also know we are not at the center of the universe, that the universe is vast beyond our wildest imagination, and that beneath the Earth's crust, the rock is molten magma around what most scientists seem to think is a massive core of hot, solid iron. Our view of the universe has been changed over the centuries by rational, verifiable observations, and our theology and our faith need to change accordingly. It's not credible to believe in a three-decker universe and to populate the highest parts with celestial beings, the lowest regions with demons, and to see the earth as some kind of plane for the eternal conflict between roving spirits from heaven and hell. just because the scriptures use such images and understandings from the time that they were written, doesn't mean these images are either accurate or easily transferable to other situations. To give just one more example, I recently wrote about our church bees for a national poetry project. If you're not familiar with our church bees, they live in the nave roof just above the porch, and they've been here certainly for at least 24 years, and I love them very much. So I wrote a poem about them. In association with this, out of interest, I did some research about how often bees are mentioned in the Bible. I wonder what your guess might be. Well, bees themselves seem only to be found in 4 verses in the whole of the Bible. But there are over 60 references to honey. There are no references at all in any of the Bible to bees as pollinators of flowers. Now, my point is that while people write about what they observe and what is obvious, they don't write about what they don't know. And as our knowledge develops, so too our understanding and wisdom about what is really going on in the world. It is common knowledge now that bees are important pollinators, that they don't just make the most obvious visible product of their existence, honey. So we need to be very careful about the language of demons and of demon possession. There are genetic, chemical, social, behavioral, and psychological reasons why people experience mental illness. Now, some would want to add a category of spiritual. Fair enough, but again, I think care is needed with such language. What do we actually mean when we're using that word spiritual, and what assumptions come along with it? So I'm just saying be careful with this language of demons and demon possession. We do still need it. We need it to interpret the story of the healing of the Gerasene demoniac. We have to understand it in its own terms if we're to make any sense of what we read in the Gospels. So what then did people understand back then in Israel about demons? Well, according to Catherine Emmett in a thesis on this story, she says the Greek word daimon means simply divine. Demons were thought to be supernatural or divine powers and were not necessarily associated with evil. In fact, the Greek writer Homer used the word daimon interchangeably with theos or God. Demons were separate from humans, more powerful and exotic, but they did not have as much influence or magnitude as deities or their divine power. That was one understanding of the word. A second way that daimon was used was to mean fate or destiny. So things would happen to humans as a result of daimon, luck or chance. Another way that demon would have been used was in reference to a person who was made insane by demonic forces. Now, this was a play on 2 meanings of the word daimon, both the supernatural force causing the insanity and a reference to the insane individual. To be demonized meant to be insane or mad. Therefore, someone who behaved outside the bounds of the social norms would have been understood to be possessed by demonic entities. Greeks also understood that those who were epileptic were afflicted with a sacred disease caused by the possession of the individual by a demon. Now, one simple way to understand possession would be as a type of illness caused by an external and supernatural source. It doesn't seem that the synoptic authors, Matthew, Mark and Luke, understood possession to be an illness. In fact, there's more evidence that there was a distinction between an illness that could be healed and a possession that must be exorcised. Now, in the Gospels, the healing of the Gerasene demoniac follows the calming of the storm on the lake. The writers, who had numerous stories that they could include in their Gospels, have shaped what they've written, and they seem to have wanted to link a natural disaster with a human healing. The original author of this story probably chose to connect the two types of miracles to highlight Jesus' miraculous abilities. It's also important to contrast the confusion and disbelief of the 12 after the calming of the storm to the immediate recognition of Jesus by the demons. In all three versions of the calming of the sea, the disciples ask a similar question. Who is this man who even the winds and seas obey him? The disciples clearly do not understand who Jesus is or his relationship to God. In the Gerasene story, the demons know who Jesus is. They call him Jesus, Son of the Most High God. Now, the term Most High God was used by the Romans to refer to the Jewish God. The demons know his name and identify his relationship to the Jewish God, the great God on high, while the disciples don't understand. Now, using some of our modern understandings of illness and disability, it's possible to see that the disabled and ill man in the Gerasene cemetery doesn't fit into the kind of bodies or categories that are allowed to exist in popular stories about disability. This man in the region of Gerasene, he is marginalized and excluded. He's not embraced as an inspiration, but shunned as a terror. He's not the overcomer of his disability, but the one who must be repeatedly overcome with chains. He's not the sports hero, but he's a loser, permanently in last place. And he's not the warrior cancer child, but a child who's grown up to wage war on his community. The character of the Gerasene demoniac still, though, has great potency, I think, to wrestle in his chains, ferociously confronting us with our prejudice and our ignorance about the place of disability in our society. I think we do very well to look carefully at this man and to listen to his raging and his suffering. The good news, in the form of this story, is that Jesus was able to heal the tormented man, restoring calm to his mind as he had restored calm to the lake's waves. And I love the mystery of this story, its energy, its comfort, and its hope, and that it includes some of my favourite words in the Gospels. Sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. Now finally, in thinking about the meaning of this story, I think various filters and frames might be used to try to understand what's going on. let me offer you briefly four ways of understanding and interpreting the meaning of the story. So firstly, the universal mission of Jesus is a theme here. Jesus travelled beyond the bounds of what might be called his home territory. He crossed boundaries, physical, racial, and social, to encounter all kinds of humanity. If we are to be faithful followers of Jesus, we must step beyond our little worlds to share the compassion of Christ. A second theme in this story is the power of Jesus. Now, how the power of God miraculously heals cannot be explained. If it could be explained, it wouldn't be miraculous. And there are always far more people who were not healed miraculously by Jesus than he ever made suddenly well, and we can read about in the Gospels. So we need to be careful. Living in reliance and constant expectations of miraculous improvements to health and well-being is not Christian. It is not consistent with what Jesus did or taught. But it is Christian to trust in the power of God and that God's will be done. That is the heart of our prayer. And so we trust God to work out his purposes according to his will. And now and again, maybe amazing things can happen through divine power. So we do not lose heart or faith in this power. Now, related to this, a third theme in the story is the conquering of evil. Illness is not evil. Mental illness is not evil. But illness can alter our capacity to make sensible, responsible, moral choices. Now, as Christians, we follow Jesus by not fearing evil and by cooperating with God's purposes in delivering the world from evil as much as it lies within our power. And a fourth possible theme to understand this story is the theme of the coming of the kingdom. In our hearts and in our minds and in our souls, we believe as followers of Christ that we are adopted citizens of the realm of God revealed to us by Jesus. And God is looking to send ambassadors into the world to represent the values of this kingdom. And just as Jesus told the healed man not to come with him, but to remain in his community, to tell everyone what the power of God had done for him, so too we are to be representatives and ambassadors of the kingdom of God. Finally, I came across a prayer written by someone called Stephen Shakespeare, which attempts to draw some of these strands together. So let me offer this prayer now in conclusion. Lord, you trouble our peace. You step upon our guarded shore and confront our chaos. May we who are divided and colonized by the forces of death learn from you to speak your own name and proclaim your works of life through Jesus Christ, tamer of legions. Amen.